It's time for Good Health, an opportunity to hear from our local healthcare community about the most current medical topics and how they relate to your healthy lifestyle. Good Health is brought to you by Good Shepherd Healthcare System. Now let's welcome our host, Nick Bejarano.
Good morning. This is Nick Bejarano, and you are listening to the Good Health Radio Show on KOHU, sponsored by Good Shepherd Healthcare System. This morning, we are going to be discussing general surgery, and with me is Dr. Chris Keeler. And you are also able to get involved as you listen today and send us any questions you might have about general surgery to kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. Again, that is kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. So welcome, Dr. Keeler.
Good morning.
So Dr. Keeler is a general surgeon who practices here locally at Good Shepherd Healthcare System. And something I want to ask you is just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I grew up in a small town, a little smaller than Hermiston, and so growing up in a small town, knowing what kind of needs are necessary to keep the community going, when I decided to go into medicine, I knew I wanted to be in an area where I could feel like I benefit the community the most. So I actually am one of four children. I'm the second, and I didn't actually decide I wanted to be a doctor until I was in my mid-20s. So I kind of started a little late, but through a lot of work and effort, I was able to attend Michigan State University, and that's where I met my beautiful wife, and we've been married 10 years.
Right, and you mentioned your beautiful wife here, and she is also a doctor, I believe. What does she do?
She is an obstetrician and gynecologist.
And she also practices locally here in the community.
She does. It's nice to be in the same place where we can often see each other. Our busy schedules, sometimes we don't get to see each other at home, but it's nice to be able to work in the same place and see her often. Lila also grew up in a small town, and so when it came time to graduating and finishing our training, we knew that being in a small place was where we wanted to be, and we think it's a great opportunity that we have here and to be in Hermiston. In the last 2 years, it's been great.
That is really awesome. So what made you choose general surgery when you went into medicine?
Well, I think ultimately it was just how involved the general surgeon is in caring for mostly sick hospitalized patients, but also providing a breadth of outpatient procedures. With most specialists, you see where they focus their attention on one or maybe two specific kinds of diseases, and they become highly specialized. A good example would be ear, nose, and throat, urology, even gynecology. They focus on usually one system, and they become experts. Like a general practitioner of medicine, your primary care provider or an internal medicine doctor, their scope of practice covers all systems. So they kind of have to know a lot about everything. And that's kind of how general surgery is in the surgical world. We know a lot about a lot of things.
Right.
And oftentimes when you have a surgical consult in the hospital, it's usually by a general surgeon who can come in and evaluate to determine the extent and whether or not a specialist may be needed.
Awesome. So in choosing to come and practice at Good Shepherd Healthcare System, what are some of the surgeries that you perform kind of most in our community, or what services do you provide for our community that allows them to actually stay here and not to have to go anywhere for general surgery?
Well, like often most communities, most of their surgical care is provided by a general surgeon, and whether or not the patients know that, if you have some kind of a trauma and you go to the ER, you're usually being seen by a general surgeon who substitutes as the trauma surgeon. And most basic traumas, a general surgeon is very capable of handling most basic traumas. When we start getting into severe brain injuries or something, then that's where the neurosurgeon or a higher level of care may be needed. But general things that you would see in a community where a general surgeon provides surgical procedures would include If an ear, nose, and throat specialist isn't there, we do thyroid surgeries and parathyroid surgeries.
Okay.
Basic esophageal procedures. General surgeons are trained to do endoscopic procedures. So in communities like ours, we do a lot of the colonoscopies and EGD procedures, not only to help do screening for cancer, but also to stop bleeds or treat ulcers. Oftentimes we diagnose cancer, and we can do the cancer surgeries usually. We provide basic breast procedures. Most people know the general surgeon is the hernia guy.
Right.
So we do a lot of hernias, and that includes diaphragmatic hernias. And that usually is a procedure that can benefit patients who suffer from chronic refractory gastroesophageal reflux disease.
Great. And that is basically acid reflux, correct?
It is.
In a general term, just to make it more simple.
Heartburn.
Oh, heartburn.
Yeah.
Right.
So patients will often have symptoms, but they don't recognize that what they're suffering from really is just heartburn. The most common, I think, is just this general ache that people get in their stomach. It's usually not severe where they feel like they need pain medications or anything, but it's gnawing and it's annoying and it's persistent. And things that I tell my patients most often when it comes to heartburn is managing certain things in your life, including the foods we eat, can truly benefit whether or not you suffer from heartburn. But there are many factors that go into why a patient would continue to suffer from heartburn, and oftentimes it isn't just a simple diet change or some exercise in their life. And that's where you see a lot of these medications that are out there that are now over the counter that you can purchase to help relieve some of those symptoms.
In certain terms, I guess people could probably over-medicate with those medications, correct? And is that when it's time to go and see you, a general surgeon, to be evaluated for your acid reflux?
Any person that feels like they need medications more than 3 to 4 times a week to treat heartburn or heartburn-related symptoms, they should be evaluated by their primary care provider to determine whether or not an additional workup may be needed. Some people actually suffer from peptic ulcer disease or some additional medical conditions that isn't just going to be treated with maybe some diet modifications or exercise. Adding medications, if they're not helping, then additional workup. And usually that's how I get involved with the patient.
Okay. Well, you are listening to the Good Health Radio Show on KOHU, and this is your host, Nick Bejarano, and with me today is Dr. Chris Keeler. And again, if you have any questions for Dr. Keeler, you are encouraged to go ahead and email those to kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. Again, that is kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. And Dr. Keeler was just talking with us about heartburn. Well, what are some of the other general procedures that you do in addition to surgeries for heartburn? I know there's some common things that you mentioned. You mentioned hernia repairs. What else do you see a lot of in our community?
Well, we often will do office-based type of procedures, things that may not require them to be in a hospital environment in order to have some procedures done. So things that are common include hemorrhoids, and there are various procedures to treat hemorrhoids, but that really determines on what type, whether they're external or internal, and whether or not, how severe they are. So there are certain injection therapies that can be utilized.
Okay.
For basics, I tell my patients, make sure that they are on a good fiber regimen. That usually, long-term, will keep the hemorrhoids from acting out and becoming inflamed and often bleed, but we do office-based procedures where we can actually do a banding procedure for internal hemorrhoids, and it's well-tolerated, very little pain at all. But for severe types, oftentimes they do require more surgical, an invasive surgical procedure, and it's nice to be able to take them to the OR for that.
Right.
but we do lumps and bumps.
Okay.
We do a lot of biopsies, skin biopsies. So the current one that we're doing now that we're generating a lot of interest in the community is our radio frequency ablation for varicose veins.
Okay. So we do have our first question here. And
okay.
The question is, does a patient always need to see a general practitioner for a referral, or can they make an appointment with the surgeon on their own?
That's a great question. That really depends on your insurance. Some insurances do not require a referral, and you would have to contact your specific insurance provider to know if you have the ability to do that. But I would say most generally speaking, the best way to get access to any specialist, mm-hmm. and even though we general surgeons offer a breadth of surgical procedures, we're still considered specialists.
Right.
And so if your insurance requires a referral, you would have to get one in order to see me or someone like me. But if not, feel free to pick up the phone, call 667-541-3804.
Well, there you go. And you had mentioned just before we took the question about the new varicose vein procedure that you were offering. Does that actually require a referral from a general practitioner, or can somebody just come in and request an appointment to see you for that?
Most patients are just calling in. They know that they have visible varicose veins. Most people recognize that they have that problem and are well enough familiar to say, well, gosh, I've got these big bulging veins in my leg. Maybe mm-hmm. I should see somebody about it. It's never wrong to see your primary care provider. Again, the way I explain this to my patients is your primary care provider is your quarterback. Mm-hmm. He's the manager of your health. And so anything that you're doing to seek some kind of treatment, if they understand and know what's going on, oftentimes they can help direct or lead how that process happens. And oftentimes they can be the person that helps get you to those places faster than maybe you could do on your own.
Okay.
And maybe you don't need a specialist. Maybe it's something that they can address and handle right there. But it's never wrong to contact your primary care provider.
First, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So in talking about the varicose vein procedure, what are some of the symptoms that people may have before they realize, oh, you know, this is really at the point now where I really need to get some help for it?
So generally, people will notice that they've got a vein problem. They see a big bulging vein in their legs.
Okay.
Or they start to see these small little, what we term spider veins, but they're little branches of veins. They don't necessarily stick out. But I think the first symptom is seeing that you've got veins that are distended in your leg. But the longer that process goes on, then complications can arise. So patients will experience pain in and around where the veins are. They can experience swelling in their lower extremities, so from the knee down to their ankle. And of course, the swelling then also contributes more to pain. Mm. But in really severe cases where varicose veins go untreated and the process continues, they can develop things like ulcers in their legs. They can get blood that slows down in the veins and can clot and develop things like phlebitis.
Wow.
And so the varicose veins, when it starts, the best thing to do is recognize that, hey, I've got these, and then make sure you talk to some healthcare provider about what your options are.
Okay.
The simplest thing would be wearing compression stockings.
Okay.
But factors, patients often ask, well, how did this happen, or how can I prevent this? And generally speaking, we see a lot of patients that stand for long periods of time. Often they're standing on hard surfaces without any kind of foot support.
Wow.
Long standing for long periods of time, or walking and being in one place on hard surfaces for long periods of time, over time can create some varicose veins.
Wow. So can this condition affect people of all ages, or does it affect a certain demographic more so than others?
The younger patients that I see in their 20s and 30s tend to be female, and the reason they present at such a young age with this is often due to a pregnancy.
Wow.
So we know that the the pregnancy, the uterus often distends and grows, and as it sits in the pelvis, it creates more of a vascular flow problem and can generate more pressures in those lower legs, which then can contribute to valvular dysfunction, which then leads to the veins being distended, which is exactly what a varicose vein is. It's just a distended vein that doesn't function normally.
Wow.
And so they tend to be in the superficial veins in the legs, not necessarily the deep veins of the legs, but and that's why they're so prominent. It's because they're right under the skin surface. You can see them readily. So in young patients, that tends to be the risk factor that they have, is they're female and they've been pregnant. So we don't often offer a treatment for women who have had a first or second pregnancy that now have varicose veins and they want something done but have plans to have more children.
Okay.
We tend to offer a conservative treatment like compression stockings if they plan to get pregnant.
Again. Okay.
If they're done having children and want something done, that's where you can look at more advanced procedures. The radiofrequency ablation procedure that we offer in the office is a very non-invasive type of procedure. It's like starting an IV, but we do it in the vein that has the disease.
Wow.
And so when they're done, the results are instantaneous.
Wow. Well, you're listening to the Good Health Radio Show on KOHU. This is your host, Nick Bejarano, and with me again is Dr. Chris Keeler, general surgeon, and we are talking about radiofrequency ablation for varicose veins. If you have any questions for Dr. Keeler, you're encouraged to go ahead and send us an email to kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. Again, that is kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. So what is the difference with the RFA ablation procedure as compared to some of the previous varicose vein procedures? I've heard of like things as vein stripping, which people have told me is very painful or can be painful. As far as pain goes, is RFA a lot less painful?
It is. It's well tolerated. Often when we do this procedure in the office, we're doing it in about 30 minutes. And we just use some local anesthetic, like you'd get at the dentist, to numb the skin where we do the procedure. But after that, it's pretty much painless.
That is incredible.
One of the benefits to the RFA is that it can be repeated in additional veins depending on the severity of the disease. So some patients will require multiple treatments, and it's safe. It's safe to do that in another leg, in a lower part of the leg versus the upper part of the leg. And the thing that patients like the most is it's very convenient. It has no pain, and the recovery time is fast, and the results are instantaneous.
Wow. So what is the recovery time? I know it probably varies from person to person, but is it a general time frame?
Pretty general.
Okay.
Once the patient has the procedure, we put a compression wrap on their leg, because there can be some swelling after the procedure. That wrap is there to help reduce that swelling and offer a little comfort. 72 hours later, they get a confirmatory test that the veins that we intended to treat were treated. And once that ultrasound is done, the dressings come off, and they can pretty much do whatever they want after that.
72 hours.
Yeah.
That is incredible.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
Well, in addition to this procedure, what else are some of the other things that you do that we can let our community know about that they may not have to go elsewhere, but they can stay here and go to Good Shepherd Healthcare System and utilize the services that you provide?
Well, we tend to see a lot of cancer in our community.
Okay.
And I think that's, common in most communities. You'll see patients that will have different types of cancers for different things. General surgeons often do treat many different types of cancer. So patients can have breast cancer.
Okay.
We treat and provide surgical services for breast cancers, including mastectomies.
Okay.
But even smaller lumpectomies or even biopsies. Same thing for colon cancer or stomach cancer or small intestinal cancer. oftentimes the general surgeon is the one that will provide this, the basic surgical services for that cancer resection. But with cancer comes the need for certain patients need chemotherapy.
Right.
We provide the ability to place a catheter under the skin that goes directly into the venous system so that patients can receive chemotherapy. Those are the types of procedures that general surgeons perform.
Okay.
So a wide variety. But one of the things that we had touched on earlier was the heartburn.
Right.
And how treatments, usually the first treatments are adjustment of diet, certain things out of your lifestyle like tobacco or alcohol. But if those conservative measures don't resolve the symptoms, there are multiple procedures out there that are surgical in nature to help prevent acid reflux. And the one that's most commonly performed, and it's one that we offer readily here at Good Shepherd, is a Nissen fundoplication. And that's where we essentially take the lower part of the esophagus and wrap it with the stomach so that it creates a new physiologic valve so that acid does not wash up into the esophagus and create all the symptoms that people suffer from.
Wow. Okay, so we do have a second question here that we got from somebody. And the question is in regards to the varicose vein procedure, and it is, and you touched on this a little bit, but the caller is asking, how long and or painful is the recovery?
Well, it is not painful. I tell patients they should not expect to have pain after this procedure.
Okay.
If there's a mild ache, then a Tylenol or an Advil can help, but generally...
And that's all they need.
That's all they need. And the recovery is literally 72 hours. Most patients can go home and ambulate and do a few things. Of course, they have a leg that's wrapped.
Sure.
But, you know, that first 72 hours is basically you're just taking it easy.
Okay.
And then once the test is done to confirm that the results are what we expected, the wrap comes off and they can go back to their normal routine.
Okay. So when they go home after the procedure, are they able to walk around a little bit at home? Are they supposed to keep their leg up and ice it or?
No icing, but yeah, resting.
Okay.
Is better.
Okay.
But we still want people to get up frequently, ambulate. We know that the studies that show that patients that ambulate early after procedures tend to recover better.
Okay.
So we do want them getting up, but I don't expect somebody to go out and walk their 5K that they normally do.
Right.
You know, we generally want them to have a light 3 days where most of the time they're down, resting, okay, not up.
And just for the listener, ambulate means essentially just moving around.
Correct. Getting up off a chair, a couch, or a bed, and walking around.
Okay. Well, with me this morning is Dr. Chris Keeler, and you are listening to the Good Health Radio Show on KOHU. And if you have any questions for us, please email them to kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. And right now, we had just had a question about the recovery from a varicose vein procedure that Dr. Keeler does, and he was just discussing that. What else kind of procedures do you do that you think the community should be aware of?
Well, that's kind of a hard question to answer because there are a lot of procedures that, you know, general surgeons do. You may find that surgical specialists, they specialize in maybe a dozen surgeries, where I have privileges to do over 200 types of procedures.
Wow.
So lots of different things. What we try and encourage our primary care provider community is to let them know that if they have a patient that may need a surgical procedure that does not require an advanced specialist, to reach out to the general surgeons at their local area hospital and ask for a consult so that we can see the patient. We often can treat the patient, offer the procedure here, and save patients from having to travel long distances to have certain types of procedures. So,
right.
So you know, there is a lot of different things that we do. But again, cancers, lumps and bumps, hernias, the ER, we see a lot of patients that come in with appendicitis and gallbladder attacks.
Okay.
And so those are two of the most common procedures, along with hernia repairs, that general surgeons do.
On a regular basis.
Regular basis, almost every day.
Okay. All right. Another question that I have for you is, if somebody is preparing to have surgery, what are some things that you think that they should be aware of or that they should know just to kind of prepare and get ready for their day of surgery?
Well, often that depends on what procedure you're having. I mean, if somebody's having a colonoscopy, for example, there's little in the way of preparation other than the colon prep.
Sure.
But most general terms is making sure that a patient comes to the day of their surgery fasting.
Okay.
We see that oftentimes patients forget. They're in the routine of waking up and just having breakfast or their normal routines. And if they show up to their appointment having eaten or had something to drink, that often will delay their surgical procedure because the risk of having that food in the stomach wash up in the back of their throat during surgery and can cause some really significant
problems.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. So that's why we take that so seriously as far as the food and drink. But
okay.
Between the hospital surgical department and your surgeon, you'll get many instructions on these are the things we want you to do right before surgery. And hopefully that helps. But generally speaking, fasting, absolutely.
Okay. So basically what you're saying, too, is to make sure that they follow the instructions that they get from the surgery department and also from your office.
Yeah.
To make sure that they are prepared for their day of surgery and especially fast. Don't eat any food or drink before their procedure just so it doesn't cause any problems or delays their procedure. I'm sure in some cases cancel.
Exactly. There have been unfortunate circumstances, and rather than have a patient just wait in the day surgery for 8 hours while the food digests, oftentimes we'll just reschedule a elective procedure. Now,
okay.
Emergencies that come through the ER are totally different.
Right, I'm sure.
And if somebody has an emergency, we follow a different set of rules for that patient because the situation requires much different management. So I'm not necessarily going to worry about whether somebody had Taco Bell before they came to the hospital with a open wound in their groin from an injury.
Right.
We're just going to take them to the OR, clean them out, fix them. We'll worry about the food
in the
stomach
later.
A little bit later, you know.
All right. Well, you are listening to the Good Health Radio Show on KOHU, sponsored by Good Shepherd Healthcare System, and I am your host, Nick Bejarano. Thank you for listening today, and thank you, Dr. Keeler, for sharing your time with us and sharing a little bit more about what a general surgeon does so our community can get a better understanding about that.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on. I really appreciate that.
All right. Thank you.